All right, happy Halloween, everyone. I'm a big fan.
You're lucky we're not all in costume.
I know, it's true. I'm the Fat Hulk this year, so you're missing out on my Fat Hulk costume. I apologize. It's pretty good, I'm not going to lie. So I have nothing to disclose. As Sonia said, I'm at UCSF. My advisor, Sherry Dworkin, and I are doing this project along with Faye Wax, who's her collaborator at Cal Poly Pomona, and there's a whole research team at Cal Poly as well, so representing. If you came to the Health at Every, how many people came to the Health at Every Size session last year at APHA? So a few people. So there's going to be quite a bit of overlap in my presentation, but I'm going to focus a little more specifically on food within the Bigger Food. Last year was kind of the overview, but we'll go over that. So this project came about because Sherry and I had been talking a lot about bodies and body size, and we're aware of this obesity epidemic panic around America and across the globe. And we're also aware as sociologists about the changing nature of fatness, that what it means to have a large body has changed over time. And also as sociologists, something called neoliberal ideas of health or healthism. And this concept is used in sociology and public health in a variety of disciplines. But it's really the idea that what is being sold or promoted within health and fitness is not necessarily a healthy body, but a body that looks and enacts health, right? And we know that it's not always the same thing. And it's what we've been talking about today on this panel, that you can't tell by looking at someone what their health is like, but that's what the health and fitness industry is selling us. And so we wanted to look at reality TV as a place to examine what health means and what fitness means. And there's been a number of articles since we started this project that have looked at the Bigger Loser specifically, but some of what we read in terms of background with stuff on race and other reality TV shows. But we really wanted to focus on body size and health and fitness. So like I said, this is an update from last year's presentation. The next few slides are going to be a little bit repetitive, but for people that weren't here, I wanted to give you a little bit of background about the Bigger Loser. So our primary research question for the whole project is, what cultural ideologies about fat, fitness, health, and the body are put forward on The Biggest Loser? And the sub-question for the presentation today that I'm going to talk about is, how is food dealt with and discussed on The Biggest Loser? So this is a content and textual analysis, and these results are a subset of the qualitative content analysis, so really looking at what people are saying and what they're doing on the show. So this sub-analysis is 15 episodes that we analyzed across 8 seasons. So a little bit of context to the show. How many people have seen The Biggest Loser, like watched it on TV or before? So a lot of people, right? It's a really popular show. It's enormously popular. So if you're not familiar, it's a contest, right? It's a game show. They win money at the end. But they're taken away to something called The Ranch, which is a communal living situation for the contestants. And these are all very large folks. Well, in some cases, in earlier seasons, it's actually quite smaller people. People who most people in public health would read as needing to lose 50, 100, 200 pounds to be healthy, which we talked a lot about today, about disrupting that a bit. But as sociologists, we're interested in the fact these people are taken away from their families anywhere from 1 week to 12, 13, 16 weeks. They have no job responsibilities. There are no family responsibilities. Their kids aren't there. And they have access to top-notch exercise facilities, trainers, free food, chefs, nutritional counseling, calorie control, technology. You see in later seasons they wear armbands that count their calories. It's not like a normal way that people live their lives, right? And then activities that are shown, right, exactly, so far from normal. So activities that are shown, they're mainly shown working out. That's the bulk of the show, as well as physical and mental challenges. But, it's a game show, so they're going to show them doing kind of ridiculous things often. And then there's some eliminations and game strategy. But what I want to talk about today is they're sometimes shown eating. They're very rarely shown cooking, and food, when it's included, is included in an interesting way. So this is similar to what I presented last year of general themes. And the idea of the show is that anyone can do it, right? Anyone can lose this weight. It's easy. Anyone should be able to apply these principles that we're showing you on the show and get healthy at home. When we know in reality, that's not true. And weight loss amounts on the show can range anywhere from 2 to 12, 15 pounds a week. And especially for the men in the show, they tend to lose a lot of weight, 8 to 12 pounds per week, which is really unhealthy. It's a lot of weight at once on your body, and we don't see a lot of the ways that they're doing this, which are often in unhealthy ways. There's also a lot of sin and redemption narratives, which is something that we're going to talk about in the project as a whole, but I just wanted to read you some quotes So the idea is that the fatness is the sin, right? It's this bad thing. And the way to redeem yourself from this sin is through exercise, it's through weight loss, it's through calorie control. So the sin part, you know, especially in sort of first episodes, we're introduced to these people, and then finale episodes, things like, I can't believe I let it get this bad. I'm so angry at myself for letting myself get this big. I've let my dead son down by gaining this weight. I'm constantly crying because I'm so upset with the way my life has been. Right? So it's like horrible. I'm a terrible person because I'm fat. And then a redemption later, you know, in the weight loss episodes, we hear them saying, like, I'm a whole new person. I have a whole new life. I have been redeemed in these ways through weight loss. And then, you know, my interest as a sociologist is what is left out of the frame. What does the audience not see? And it's things like food, which I'm going to talk about today, issues like class, who can afford to leave their job for anywhere from 2 to 16 weeks and still have it when they come back, issues of race, most contestants on the show were white, issues of employment, like I said, and there's little to no follow-up on previous contestants. You know, a few contestants have come out as having eating disorders after the show that they developed as a result of the show. We only see maybe 2 or 3 previous contestants who have kept the weight off, and we don't get profiles of the ones who have gained the weight back. So what I want to talk about today is some of the food results. So season one, I found, is more focused on food than others. I don't know if they sort of figured out that that was a bad idea. Nobody cares about the food part, so they didn't do it in later seasons. But in the first season, the trainers, which were Bob and Jillian in the first season, each had a food plan. One trainer didn't eat less, like a portion control. One did a high-frequency eating plan. And then a little bit of nutritional education, they talked about label reading. This doesn't happen at all in later seasons. And there's also food sponsorships like Subway, which is interesting. So food is described on the show as your worst enemy. One contestant said, it's not going to be easy to stop eating, but Jillian's not messing around. It's easy to stop eating, right? That's what they think. So that's in all of their other diet experiences, that's what they've been told, right? They're going to have to restrict. And this portion control plan that Jillian lays out is to stop eating. In their minds, I have to stop eating, right? How is that healthy? The answer is it's not. So, lots of talk about resisting temptation. Food is always a temptation. Again, with the sin and redemption narratives I mentioned on the previous slide. And eating anything outside the diet, these strict diet plans that they've been given by their trainers, is breaking the diet. And how sustainable does that really sound for people? And on the finale show, one of the contestants commented on the constant surveillance aspect of the show. This is a sociologist geek moment where we think about Foucault and surveillance, but we could talk about that later. Ryan, who was the winner of season one, who has consequently gained all of his weight back, actually, said, you know, it's tough not having the cameras following you 24 hours a day. It makes a huge difference. It's tough. I have cheated a few times. I've had some gummy worms. I have time to be alone. That's my biggest downfall. I was ashamed of myself. There's no way to, other way to say it, and I don't ever want to feel that way again. Well, he's gained the weight back, so we don't actually know how he feels now, but I imagine not that great since we don't hear from him. In later seasons, we see that food is always a temptation. There's a dichotomous good and bad food. Food is never in between. It's either horrible for you or it's great for you. And the horrible for you foods are a temptation and they're terrible. And they're going to get you back into that sin narrative that we want you to get away from with weight loss and eating what we think is best for you. So we hear things like, I don't want to get on that scale because everyone will see everything that has ever passed my lips. Right, so they're going to see all my bad food choices on my body. And always with food temptation, so Allie, who was a season 5 winner, who was the first female winner, by the way, there's a lot of gender stuff that I'm not getting into today about men versus women and how they lose weight and why men almost always win the show. But Allie says, every day I struggle to get to the gym and to make right food choices, and it's a struggle. Every night I find myself looking at the fridge, dipping into several flavors of frozen yogurt, and I'm not sure why. Fascinating to me. In season 6, when contestants find out their challenge involves food, one says, oh no, we're going to have to eat something. It turns out that the challenge was related to the food contestants where they were tasked with picking the best, worst food. So given the option of 2 types of salad, they had to pick the one that was best for you based on calories, fat, things that they were supposedly taught, but we don't see them getting taught those skills on how to figure that out. They're just supposed to guess as part of a game. And they bring in an expert who says that, you know, it's hard for the average Joe to know what to do, but then we're expecting the contestants and America at home to know what to do. But then we're also telling them it's hard, and we're not giving them the skills to do that or showing how to gain those skills, except that we're the Big of Loser promotes their cookbooks. and their books and their merchandise. So, you know, through consumption, you can learn how to tell between good and bad food. How to not consume, as it were, yes. And something that comes up, especially in later episodes, is food, when food is framed as the enemy, is this idea of food being framed as addiction, especially fast food. So it pops up a lot in the first season, or first episodes, and the finale episodes. One person said, Blaine says, my selfishness, my weakness, my addiction to food stops now. And Kathy says, you know, they say you switch one addiction to another. I went from alcohol to food. Excuse me, America, I have a new addiction, spin. Like spin class, the bike. And so she went from a food addiction to an exercise addiction, and we encourage this, right? We see it as healthy. When really, you know, when we talk about addiction generally, it shouldn't really matter what the addiction is. The concern is the obsessive behavior, the taking control of your life. But we're perfectly okay with her saying, I'm giving up my food addiction and taking up an exercise addiction. Even if, you know, she wasn't serious, maybe it's not clinical, but we're not concerned about it because it's what we think needs to happen in order to redeem these fat bodies, right? And season 13 finds a former Olympian getting asked about why he's on the show. And the trainer says, yo, Olympics, how did you get here? And the person says, took a lack of control and replaced it with eating. I did way too much. So lots of lack of control. They don't have control over their food. It's a food addiction, right? And so food is never presented as something that is nourishing, something that is healthy, something that helps our bodies move and be in the world. It's always either great for you or it's horrible for you, and there's no in between. And if you eat those horrible foods, you're going to slip back down into that food addiction, or you're going to slip back down into that sinful fat body, and we can't have that happening. I forgot the food and race one. That's important. So race isn't actually discussed much on the show, which is not shocking because it's primetime television and that's how we roll in America, which is to say not talking about race and racism. Of the few people of color that have been on the show, it hasn't been discussed much, except in season one there was a man named Maurice on the show who was a black man. In season one they were given temptation foods with fridges, and his temptation food was fried chicken. Not joking. Fried chicken. Yeah. Right, just let that sink in for a minute. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. And then season 11 there was a Tongan man who's a Pacific Islander, and he says, I'm Tongan, I know Sean has seen the Tongan men that have been here, and they show you our culture, they show you that food is something we love, we celebrate it, and I realize that I need to stop using that as an excuse. Right? So we're telling him that his culture's celebration of food, which we would normally see as a great thing, is bad and needs to be stopped because it's leading him to this body. So I find that hugely problematic as a sociologist that we're coming in, like Paul was saying, we're coming into a community and telling them what we think is good for them. And for him, we're going to destroy a love of food and a culture that loves food. Hugely problematic. So just to bring back home some of the health at every size points, hopefully you can see all this. On the right side is sort of a lot of the health at every size concepts that we've talked about, accepting body diversity, health is multidimensional. And on the left side is how the Biggest Loser deals with those things, which is big bodies or fat bodies, health equals weight. Eating is the path to weight gain. It has to be strictly controlled. Right, so stark contrast. And really the take-home message here is that the Biggest Loser is theoretically presenting the American audience on how to be healthy, and really they're doing the opposite of all of those things, right? They are doing none of the things that are useful and healthy. Limitations, we can talk about that the full number of episodes. It's a qualitative study. I got a critique last year that from a Biggest Loser alum, actually, that said I hadn't actually watched any of the show, but I've watched about 200 hours of the show, so that's not true. The team is actually working on more coding and research. Hopefully we're going to start producing some articles in the next year or two. I'd like to thank the rest of my research team who couldn't be here today, and I will take any questions that you have, or we can clap or whatever, but I can take questions.